Welcome to the HealthLinks podcast, presented by the HealthLinks family of services. I'm your host, DJ Thatcher. You know, our mission here is to engage in conversations about the health and medical landscape of South Carolina so that we're all better informed. You know, our topic in this episode is one that we've received a lot of requests about, and that is, how can I get a better night's sleep? Whether it's something it's just stress or about our scheduling, or maybe something more medical related, such as sleep apnea, a lot of people are scrambling for some answers on how to feel more well-rested and more alert during the day. Well, in this episode, we have an expert on this. We're joined by Dr. Dana Blaylock, the owner of Sleep Better South Carolina. Dr. Blaylock, welcome to the HealthLinks podcast.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Well, Dr. Blaylock, tell us about yourself, first of all, your medical background, and then how you got into helping people with their sleep.
Great. Thanks for having me. I am a general dentist, and I have practiced dentistry in many different facets. For 8 years, I was in the Navy here in Charleston, and then I was on Johns Island. I had a dental practice there for about 16 years, and then on Daniel Island. Mm-hmm. And during that time on Daniel Island, we started learning more and more about how sleep and sleep disorders starts to affect the dentistry that we're doing. And just having a close relationship with several people who have sleep apnea, I started learning more and realizing that this was something I could do to really help a large population of not only my dental patients, but patients in the Charleston area.
Wow. Now, are you a Charleston native, or do we hear
you from the Navy? I'm originally from Kansas City, Missouri.
When I
graduated dental school, I got orders to Charleston, and I then met my husband, who was born and raised here. So mm-hmm. I've been here ever since.
And by the way, speaking of your degree, I noticed that you are a DDS. I know that, some dentists are DMDs. And is there a difference between, what do they stand for, first of all? And
well, DMD is mm-hmm. Doctor of Medical Dentistry, mm-hmm. and DDS is Doctor of Dental Surgery. It really is just based on what part of the country you went to school and where you got your degree. There's really no discerning differences.
Interesting. Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying. A lot of people wonder what the differences are among these different initials. So that clarifies that. Right. So you're in general practice doing general dentistry. Is that correct? And then you made this transition to sleep,
sleep
or what?
I started doing more and more of the sleep dentistry when I was on Daniel Island mm-hmm. and devoting more time to that, and then decided that this was the path I wanted to go and do just sleep. So a little over 2 years ago, I sold my dental practice and then opened a standalone practice west of the Ashley in Charleston. And soon I'm going to be starting a satellite office in Bluffton, South Carolina.
Because
there are so many people in that area that are needing the services that we can provide.
Sure.
So now I do just sleep.
All right. Well, that's terrific. Now, I don't know what the average person would think, but would they think of going to a dental specialist for their sleep problems, or would they think they should see a neurologist or whatever? I don't know, a pulmonary doctor?
Yeah, that's a great question. Most of the time, somebody should have a conversation with their physician. You know, explain what they're going through. A physician may notice that their blood pressure is going up, or that they're having harder times managing their blood sugar, or they're tired, they have headaches when they wake up, and then the physician hopefully will order a sleep test. From there, if they have a diagnosis of sleep apnea, then the decisions need to be made how you're going to treat it. A very common way to treat it is with a CPAP. That's kind of the gold standard. And although it works very well, so many patients suffer or struggle with their CPAP. Mm-hmm. So that's where I come into play. We can treat and manage the disease with oral devices.
Okay.
And that's a wonderful option for those suffering from either they're struggling with their CPAP or they're suffering with sleep apnea and also with snoring. Does a very good job of alleviating snoring, which is the most problematic, I would say, side effect that not only the patient, but also their bed partner will hear.
Sure, sure. Just to back up for a moment, so someone is having issues with their sleep, they finally seek help, and one of the first steps, as you mentioned, is a sleep study. And yes. Just very briefly, what is that all about, or how is that performed?
So you can definitely go into a lab where you spend the night there, and they hook up probably 24 leads. And I mean, this gives us a lot of good information, but the problem is it's not representative of a normal night's sleep.
I would
say. So many patients say, oh, I didn't sleep at all. So in comes home sleep testing. And this is something you wear that gives us information about the heart rate and the breathing. Some tells us body position as well as snoring levels. And it may not give us quite the amount of data that an in-lab sleep test does, but it does allow you to sleep in your own bed. You don't have somebody watching you or waking you up and, you know, manipulating wires. So home sleep tests are very readily available. And most insurance companies recognize that over an in-lab sleep test. In other words, they'd rather start with something a little less expensive than the in-lab test.
Sure. I know my own smartwatch will track the hours that I sleep, if I snore, I don't think I do, or other things as well. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's interesting that you have these in-home types of studies that could be done now. So you mentioned that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the devices, there are a lot of wearables that give us a lot of good metrics. Mm-hmm. However, to get true, say, apnea levels and pulse oxygen saturation, you need something a little more sophisticated.
Sure.
An Apple Watch, for instance, can give us oxygen levels. However, it's just going to take snapshots throughout the night, where the medical devices will record it for the whole 7 or 8 hours that you're sleeping. So there's definitely more validity and reliability in medical devices.
All right.
The wearables are fun to track and see.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing what they do. Sure. So someone then gets a diagnosis of sleep apnea or some sleep disorder. Like you mentioned, the CPAP is often something we hear about all of the time. First of all, what does it stand for? And why is that like the first step that many people jump to?
So the CPAP stands for continuous positive airway pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is doing is using the pressure of the oxygen to keep the airway from collapsing. There are many different types of CPAPs. One has an varying level of air pressure, for instance. So if a patient's airway is not collapsing, then it doesn't need as much pressure. If the machine senses that the airway is collapsing, then it ramps up the pressure. And because of that nature, many patients don't like the feel of all that air blowing into either their nose or their mouth. And doctors like CPAPs because they are able to get moment-to-moment, readings as to how effective it is if they wanted to download reports.
Mm-hmm.
But I see so many patients day in, day out who just struggle with the CPAP. There are many patients that really should be on CPAPs, but they just can't tolerate it. And that's why oral appliances are so effective and do such a good job, because most of the time the patient is going to wear that all night long.
I can imagine the compliance rate for CPAP can be on the low side just because of how uncomfortable that could be. It would make sense.
It can be. And then for those who travel or they camp and they don't have electricity, or let's say they're trying to travel light, well, then they have a bag with their CPAP in, and then they have their other baggage.
Yeah.
I always want to say I'm not in any way am I disrespecting or bashing CPAPs, because they are wonderful. It's a wonderful device if it's used. And that's the big if. If patients are using it effectively, it can very much manage the symptoms and treat sleep apnea so well.
Sure.
What the oral device does in comparison is it just manually helps keep the jaw from falling back, and then just lets you breathe naturally. So then you're not needing the positive airway pressure to maintain that open airway.
Okay. And that's what your practice specializes in, is that correct?
So, yes, that's correct.
Sure. I know a lot of people might have a device already, whether it's a mouth guard for grinding teeth, or maybe it's dental trays for putting whitener in. How does the oral device differ for this type of condition?
So if you wear a night guard or Invisalign, first of all, a night guard normally just sits on one arch or your upper teeth or your lower teeth. Mm-hmm. Now, the night guard is normally just a flat plane. So if you think about it, when you're laying down on your back, that flat plane, that flat surface may allow your jaw to fall back easier. So some patients, maybe they're not hurting their teeth because they're not grinding their teeth, but it could almost make their apnea or their snoring worse. Mm. What the devices that I do, they fit on the top and bottom teeth, and they have some mechanical way of keeping the jaw from falling back, either little wings or a hook or side pieces. All of those is what we use to keep the jaw from falling back. Therefore, the tongue. It keeps the tongue out of the back of the throat.
That makes sense. Yeah, before even going to a device like that, are there other things that people can try, just sleeping on extra pillows or elevating their head, or what are some other kind of home remedies, if you will?
Right. The first thing that the majority of patients who snore or have sleep apnea tend to have worse episodes when they're on their back. So staying off out of the supine position is normally beneficial. So some patients say, well, I start out on my side, but then I wake up on my back. So there are different devices you can get on Amazon, for instance. One is called a sleep noodle, and it actually looks like a little fanny pack that goes around your waist. And when you start to roll over, you're running up against that little noodle or little air baffle. Mm-hmm. And so that reminds you to stay off your back. You can also put a little, I say a bolster pillow, those little round pillows behind your back. And that keeps you from rolling over. So that's just kind of a quick, easy way to, number one, stay off your back. The other biggie is patients will say, well, I'm snoring and my mouth is dry. So if we hear that, that means that normally their mouth is coming open. Mm-hmm. So if you think about gravity, again, laying on your back and then your mouth dropping open, well, automatically it starts to close the airway. And then it dries out the mouth, which just aggravates the snoring. So don't breathe through your mouth. And then that's an easy thing to talk about. And then we have to look at the nose. How effective is your breathing? Are you able to breathe through your nose? I send a lot of my patients to ENT physicians to have them help them breathe better. Or they may have allergies. So we talk about different steps to make nasal breathing much more effective. So those are two things I would definitely look at. The other thing that helps with snoring and sleep apnea is just make sure that your sleep hygiene is good. Sleeping in a dark, cold room makes a big difference. No screens, you know, going off in the night. If you have a phone that's, you're going to have notifications, well, turn the notifications off and put it face down so you won't have that little whoop light up. Because even if your eyes are closed, your brain has sensors all over your skin that can sense that light that can be just enough to wake you up and prevent you from sleeping well.
Interesting. Wow. Well, tell us more about the oral appliance then, and how that's fitted, or how big it is. Is it uncomfortable? How long does it take to make one, et cetera?
Yeah. So the way we treat a patient, we do digital scans of their teeth. We don't do impressions anymore.
Okay.
And then we send it to a lab and they fabricate something that fits over the top and the bottom teeth. The ones that I use most are pretty small. Maybe we can show some pictures of them later. Mm-hmm. But I think they're very comfortable. Recently, I, for instance, was not wearing mine because I was in Invisalign. And just last week, I got my new one back from the lab. It only takes a couple weeks, by the way, to get it from the lab. And then immediately, the first night I wore it, I had the best night's sleep that I'd had in months.
So you're a product of the product. That's good to
hear. Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, is it uncomfortable? Well, like anything, you need to get used to it. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a dentist. And I've worn things in my mouth for years, you know, from braces on. So I'm used to it. But we can take patients who've never worn anything in their mouth, no mouth guards, no retainers, no partials, and they get used to it. I always use an analogy of shoes. I'll say, you know, it's kind of like getting used to hiking boots. You know, they're going to be great for you, but it's going to take some time to get used to them and have them feel like second nature. Well, the oral devices are the same. Sometimes you can get used to it the first night, but sometimes it may be an ongoing process where it takes a week or two before you wake up some morning and you think, wow, I slept so good. And then you don't want to sleep without it. It's almost like a security blanket.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I've been perusing your website. Great website, by the way, and we'll put a link to that down here, but it's sleepbettersc.com. There are some myths in there that are identified, such as, mouth guards don't work, or oral devices are uncomfortable, I don't use them, and other things like that. How would you address some of those common myths about any oral device?
So one common myth that I see about, or I hear, they'll say, well, they don't work. Well, you know, then I'll say, okay, what do you mean by work? You know, it depends on the patient or a dentist or a physician who's saying that. But if they say, well, if it's not reducing the apnea levels, well, if they are done correctly, we do see a large reduction in the apnea levels. For instance, if somebody came to me and they'd had a sleep test and they were having, say, 30 apnea events per hour, I easily see my patients who are wearing the oral devices get to the point where they're having only 5 or 6 events per hour. Or they may still have a few apnea events, but their bed partner doesn't hear them snoring. Mm. Or they wake up and they feel refreshed. So the big myth is they don't work is not true. They do work. But like anything else, it's a medical device. Everybody's going to react differently to the therapy.
Sure.
Another myth I hear about, they say, well, they cause, or I have TMJ, or I have TMJ pain, and I can't wear it. Well, basically, the position that we put in a patient in or the appliance is a very comfortable position for the jaw. If they're clenching or grinding in that position, we have some extra, I guess, little options that we use to help, again, reduce the inflammation in the joint. But we find that patients, even with history of wearing a night guard, do very well with these. So it does not cause TMJ pain. And then the third biggie I'll say is many times people say, oh, it changes the way my teeth fit together. It doesn't change your teeth anyway, but it can allow the muscles and all to relax. So we always offer our patient a little morning exerciser that they use when they get up, and it just helps them get their jaw back to the normal position. And if a patient does that and is conservative in their treatment, they do very well with the oral appliances.
Okay. All right. So a patient is diagnosed with a sleep disorder. They get one of these appliances. What's the ongoing evaluation like then? Is there an in-home type of sleep study that's required every so often, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So normally once we deliver an appliance, we follow up with a patient in 2 or 3 weeks. Okay. Depending on the type of appliance, we can do this over the phone. If they need to go to the next step, we'll guide them through that. And then normally a month or two later, I like to have them do a repeat follow-up or a sleep test. By doing this, it helps me determine if their appliance is effective or if we need to make some advancements to the position. So advancement to the position they're in may mean that we need to bring their lower jaw a little bit further forward. And by doing this, they start to see more resolution of their symptoms. And then once I feel comfortable that they're in a good position, then I'll either refer them back to their sleep physician and say, all right, I think they're in good shape. You know, go ahead and do a follow-up sleep test. And then after that, we follow up at 6 months or 12 months or as needed with the specific patient.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I have one of these devices in, is it really obvious that I have something in? Is it really big, or it sounds like it's fairly comfortable?
No, I mean, sometimes you may feel like a little bit of fullness here in the cheek. The one I wear, you can talk a little bit. It's a little bit muffled. Oh. But most of the time you put it in and you go to sleep. So it's not like you have some big thing in your mouth that's going to be horrible. Most of them are clear. So, you know, it's not like you're going to have a big purple mouthpiece in. Okay. But again, the goal is to put it in right before you go to bed and go to sleep.
Sure.
If you have to talk and say good night, or did you turn the thermostat down, you can get that out.
That's good.
Yeah. And then you just take it out in the morning.
Well, good. Yeah, I mean, contrast that to a CPAP machine, which is a mask that's strapped on and it's an external device. A whole lot simpler, it sounds like.
Yeah. And you don't have marks on your face when you wake up.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things that we hear as far as complaints, in that those marks from the straps can remain for hours. In fact, I think even the president, a month or so ago, there was a picture of him with his thing. Oh, he must have some sleep apnea. So I can imagine that would be a huge reason to not be compliant. Just something as simple as that.
Right. I mean, I'm sure we've all slept wrong or right and woke up with a big crease in your face. So,
right.
It's obvious if you just rolled out of bed. But
right.
there is that. You know, there's the vanity side of it.
Right. Yeah, I can understand.
But the other thing I see with an appliance, you can sleep in whatever position you like. So if sleeping on your stomach with your head to the side, if that's your favorite position, you can still do that. Or sleeping on your side, where, you know, sometimes if you're tethered with a hose and, you know, determining which side of the bed you have to sleep in because you're closer to the power, well, that can limit some of the freedom if you're sleeping positions.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing about it.
I can imagine it's a nicer lifestyle, too, for people who need to get up in the middle of the night, use the bathroom or something. They're not dragging a cord with them or having those other issues.
Right. So. Right.
Sounds like a great advancement. Are you seeing more patients who are coming from a diagnosis and they're trying the oral device before maybe going to a CPAP? Or do you see more patients like abandoning the CPAP and coming to you? I don't know if there's a greater mix one way or the other.
I would say I am starting to see many patients being given the option. If they have mild or moderate sleep apnea, if they tell their doctor, no, you know, I want to try an appliance. Well, luckily, I work with some great physicians, and they're able to see what I can do for their patients. So they'll say, okay, go see Dr. Blaylock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe they were starting to write them a prescription for a CPAP, but then they said, no, you know, I saw about Dr. Blaylock. I want to go see her, because they know that if things aren't optimal, that I'll refer them back. And because ultimately we want the patient to get the best resolution of their symptoms.
You mentioned earlier that CPAP is covered by insurance and the workups and so forth. Same thing with the oral devices.
Yes. Okay. And you know, I say, yes, I work with medical insurance. Mm-hmm. Now it does involve, you know, for me, it involves a few steps. I have to get notes from the physician before they talked about their need for a sleep test. I have to get a copy of the sleep test, notes after, and then the doctor has to sign a type of a prescription for that. But for instance, those patients who have Medicare basically have to pay nothing. Medicare covers 80%, and then most patients have a supplemental of some sort, so that covers your 20% coinsurance.
Okay.
Medicare, although they have their rules and their guidelines, it makes it very easy. Blue Cross Blue Shield and Aetna and Cigna all follow pretty much the rules that Medicare does. So if we get all those notes, then depending on a patient's plan, they have very little out of pocket. Now, I will say if someone has a huge deductible and just because they have a less expensive medical insurance, then they may have more out-of-pocket expense. But most patients probably pay less than $600 for their oral devices. So it's nice.
Good, good. Now, so we talked about several options here. Obviously, the CPAP is one of those, the oral devices, maybe positioning. Anything else that can be done for the treatment of sleep apnea and other disorders like that?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say new, but it's starting to be marketed quite a bit as the Inspire procedure, where it's an implantable device. It's surgery where there's an implantable device that then connects with a lead or wire that will be triggered, say, when the patient tries to breathe. Then it notifies the little pacer that then uses a stimulating wire that stimulates the nerve that physically moves the tongue forward. Wow. So when a patient has activated their device, every time they breathe, it's going to move the tongue forward throughout the night. The concept with that is that keeps the tongue out of the back of the throat, therefore helps with the apnea. And some patients do great with that. And I think it's a wonderful alternative for those who have tried CPAP and failed, or tried an appliance and failed. But I don't know, I'm a little more conservative. I think, why not try something that's totally reversible? So for instance, if you can't do a CPAP and you try an appliance, well, all you have to do is take the appliance out of your mouth. And then, you know, view surgery as a last resort.
Okay.
But the Inspire procedure is starting to be done more and more often in our area.
Wow. That's interesting. Great options to have. What about the person who says, listen, okay, I've got this. I'm certainly not going to wear one of those CPAP machines with a strap. I don't want something in my mouth. I'm not going to go through surgery. What is the risk for people who just have untreated sleep apnea?
So there are many medical side effects or consequences of untreated sleep apnea. The list goes on and on, but I mentioned some earlier, you know, high blood pressure, difficulty controlling blood sugar, multiple trips to the bathroom during the night. Patients can wake up with headaches. They can find it difficult to lose weight, even if they're eating right, because their body's just not making those good hormones that help our appetite be satiated, or they may feel like they're tired or they have brain fog. Just like, you know, trying to think of a word in a podcast. Well, some people just suffer from that all day long, mm-hmm. and they worry about their mental capabilities. Well, it can all be related to their sleep. And if they're refusing to improve their sleep or their medical condition, then they're not doing themselves any favors.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, yeah. The cardiovascular consequences. If you think about it, I use this example all the time. If my hands are the lungs and your airway is obstructed and you try to take a deep breath, well, that negative pressure is pushing on the heart because the heart is in the middle. So that means your heart is having to work in this vacuum throughout the night because of all the you know, heavy breathing to get air or to open up the airway. And that's when there can be some cardiac consequences. Working in a vacuum, it can lead to cardiac arrest. It can lead to different problems with, for instance, stroke or the cerebral vascular accidents. So it all can start or be controlled with treating the underlying cause, which is the sleep apnea.
Wow. So a whole lot more than just, hey, you're snoring and it bothers me. So there
right.
are some obviously really serious consequences here. So I'm sure you've inspired some people to reach out to you to get more information. What's the best way to reach you? And what is that whole consult like?
So we normally, patients call the office mm-hmm. and we'll kind of feel out what's going on. If they've had a sleep test, that makes it easy. If they haven't, we try to either have them work with their primary care physician, or we help them find a sleep physician that they can see just to get the sleep test and get it started. Or they can come in and I'll definitely sit down with them and talk about options. One thing that we haven't talked about, I do help patients who snore with or her snore and have sleep apnea with a laser procedure that helps tighten up the back of the throat. Which is contributing to that. So many times this is something we can add with our appliance treatment. So there's a lot of things to unfold. So a consultation, they can come in and sit down and I can go over things with them, or they start with my new patient coordinator and she'll get their records from their physicians and their insurance information and kind of do all that preliminary work before they even come into the office.
Terrific.
Basically, calling the office is a good way. You can send information through the website, and then someone will contact that way as well.
Gotcha. All right. So you've got your main office in the Charleston area, the new office opening in the Bluffton area. What's the time frame for that one?
So we're starting, or I'll be starting two Mondays a month, but it will allow me to start to get a patient flow. And then once that gets up and running, then we'll have more days available in Bluffton. Right. But we already have patients scheduled for later this month. So we're excited about that.
All
and
right.
we're working in, I'm working in a dental office there, a beautiful dental office. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, congratulations on your success and for really filling us in on the number one, the just the complexity or the seriousness of sleep apnea, and also the different options that are available. I know your website once again, and we'll put it down here, but sleepbettersc.com. It's jam packed with information. So Dr. Dana Blaylock, thank you so much for joining us here on the HealthLinks podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. Remember, our podcasts are also video-based, and so you can log in and not only hear our guests, but of course, see some of the pictures and video that go along with the subject as well. And as always, for any questions about our guest or for any comments or maybe suggestions for future podcasts, reach out to us at listen@healthlinkspodcast.com. I'm DJ Thatcher. Thank you for joining.